This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto. And we have a very special guest today. We're going to talk to Eve Engler. Eve has written many, many wonderful books. Among them are Marching to the Beat of Imperial Canada. Another is The Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy. And my personal favorite, Canada in Africa, 300 Years of Aid and Exploitation. Eve, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've written an article that I wish was on the front page of every paper. It's titled, Canada's Membership in the Five Eyes Alliance, Promoting Conflict with China. And that's appeared in Canadian Dimension, July 3. I've got to ask you, here we have two prime ministers, former, starting to kind of headbutt each other in the national media, but the subject disappears, Mulroney and Chrétien. Mulroney, I think it was after your article was published, spoke to the Globe and Mail, and he said, frankly, we have to do what Five Eyes wants us to do. And he said, we have to do that because otherwise they won't share intelligence with us. As I read that, I said, you know, these are matters that Canadians rarely hear about. So, Eva, what do you make of that? This business, what is Five Eyes and why does Canada have to be a member?
Yeah, I mean, well, the Five Eyes is a intelligence sharing agreement between the U.S., Canada, Britain, New Zealand, and Australia. And Canada doesn't have to be a member, but Canada is a member and has long been a member. And it is, intelligence sharing kind of, that sounds, you know, somewhat apolitical. It's of course highly political, and basically it's an exclusive club of elements of the British Empire historically, and it really orients the five countries' foreign policies, and Brian Mulroney's comments, which were very illuminating, I think what he's not saying there, and I think that when he makes those comments, he's, you know, being as an advocate of the Five Eyes, or specifically, we should be clear, the Communication Security Establishment is the primary Canadian contributor to the Five Eyes, just like the NSA is the primary U.S. contributor. The Communication Security Establishment is under the Department of National Defense. The Five Eyes arrangement goes right back to World War II, and an agreement right after World War II between the U.S. and Britain, and then Canada came in, and the others came in a couple years later. And it anchors an alliance between the military / security sectors of Canada with primarily with their American counterparts. And so the importance is not, I don't think the importance would be just like that there's a lot of intel that Canada gets through the Five Eyes, which that definitely exists, but it's basically, it goes right to the heart of Canada being tied into the U.S. empire primarily, but also, you know, the other three countries as well. And it's sort of a more exclusive club than NATO. And it has a very important impact on Canadian foreign policy decision-making. And the example I talk about in the article is with regards to China. But I think it's, you know, much broader, that basically being part of the Five Eyes means that you have this sort of special relationship to the U.S. empire and the, you know, the former British empire.
Yeah. It is what I found remarkable, and is that the way Mulroney talked about it really revealed that there's a club, and by focusing on the intelligence aspect of it, the intelligence people tend to run us, right? they tend to be, they're brought in, their voices are brought in. We don't ever get to actually see them, discuss how who they are, how they make decisions. But they tell us, okay, we've decided, and your article outlines this, I ask you about it now, that we don't want Huawei, the company. Huawei employs a lot of people, and Huawei is a worldwide business. But Five Eyes, over whom I don't see us having any particular direct influence, they tell us, no, you can't have Five Eyes. You probably read that article I saw from, I think it was an Australian paper, the meeting they had with Justin Trudeau, and they explained to him, he can't have Five Eyes. He's the head of the Canadian government. They tell him, you can't have it. That's actually a confession that we're being driven by basically.
I mean that's been reported on with regards to the communication security establishment, the Canadian primary Canadian component of the Five Eyes. Politicians have had very little impact on the what they actually do. There's reports going back over many years that have kind of said that only a small proportion of what's being done is sort of, there's some sort of clear directive. And it wasn't until very late in the game, like communication security establishment was entirely secret from its establishment right after World War II until it was exposed in, I believe it was 1983 by the CBC, sorry, 1974 by the CBC. And then it was moved under to be put under the Department of National Defense to have higher level of secrecy. And it was the Canadian government never admitted it existed until I think it was even though it was reported on by CBC in the 70s, until I think it was 1983. And then they basically never said almost anything about it until it's only in the last 5 or 6, 7 years since the Edward Snowden release and documentation coming out, where he detailed the Five Eyes and he detailed how the NSA sees the communications security establishment as this like special partner in the Five Eyes. And there's one a former communications security establishment person who published a book about his sort of detailing it, which, you know, broke the law, is my understanding, and detailing some of what was going on. So it's basically this like part of the formerly part of the military, but its own entity that is having incredible amount of determination on Canadian foreign policy. And it has these relationships with the NSA. For a long time, they were gathering information at Canadian embassies or high commissions around the world. So for instance, Cuba, one of the reasons why Canada continued relations with Cuba after the Cuban Revolution was because the Americans wanted Canada not to break off relations so they could spy on Cuba. And that intel was often not even being processed in Canada because apparently the communication security establishment, actually its predecessor, didn't have the capacities. So it went directly to the US. They processed the signals intelligence and then that one later on, the Americans actually paid for Canada to enhance its elements of its intelligence gathering capacities. So it's basically, you know, Canada just like completely tied in to the U.S. empire through this intelligence apparatus. And, you know, politicians come and go, and those deep relationships are maintained and, you know, and protected, as we see in recent months, I think, protected quite deeply, where my estimation of the situation with regards to, you know, the arrest of Meng Wanzhou and the whole challenge to Huawei, you know, the framing is that this is the U.S. pressuring Canada, which of course is happening. But I think we need to go a little deeper and look at the institutions within Canada that are you know really into this, because they are so deeply connected with the U.S. And, you know, a lot of corporate Canada does not want this. A lot of corporate Canada wants better relationships with China. And you have the communication security establishment primarily, but the military and the broader, you know, CSIS and other intelligence components who are really the ones pushing this ramping up of tension with China.
We're speaking to Eve Engler. The article is in the Canadian Dimension, and it is titled Canada's Membership in the Five Eyes Alliance, Promoting Conflict with China. That's July 3rd. This phenomena, you know, you raise a specter there, which is very important. Apropos of Black Lives Matter, you point out that this group, and that we are saying, and certainly Mulroney said it as clear as possible, Five Eyes, they are almost what we used to call WASPs, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And by the way, we refer to the Americans as our cousins. The Five Eyes are cousins, and they're very white. They're unilingual. They speak English. My understanding that France asked to join, and that was Sarkozy, who loved America, embraced America, but they said, no, you can't be in Five Eyes. There is and another aspect of that that I want to call your attention and ask you about, because you date this from actually the end of World War II. This is a group that actually was anxious to break up the World War II alliance. When Winston Churchill spoke in Fulton, Missouri, he advocated an Anglo-American empire. People always forget that part. Everybody remembers he said Iron Curtain, but he advocated an Anglo-American empire, and there's profound racial implications. You want to talk about that? I know you raised the issue of why.
Yeah, you know, I find it amazing that it's sort of, you know, there's a whole lot of, you know, anti-racism discussion going on. There's, you know, obviously incredible amounts of literature on, you know, on racism, but there's very little that looks at, you know, the racism in kind of inherent in the Five Eyes. I mean, basically, you know, four of the five countries that are part of the Five Eyes are the four countries, the only four countries that didn't adopt United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Britain, you know, didn't have to worry about it, but, you know, the U.S., Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, I mean, they have subsequently, but they all resisted as long as they, you know, thought they could, adopting UNDRIP. And I think that, so it's like it's the, you know, British settler colonial states. And so, you know, like I point out in the article, I mean, but I don't think it's just linguistic, right? There are more Indians and Nigerians that speak English than there are New Zealanders that speak English. There are, you know, wealthier members that are not part of the Five Eyes, right? You know, maybe like Japan, not part of the Five Eyes. So there's this racial component. There is a linguistic component. There's a relationship to the British Empire component. And I think that needs to be, you know, brought up, particularly as the Five Eyes push conflict with China, because my reading of the situation in China, conflict with China, is that there is a xenophobic component that is part of what's going on here. And it should be made really clear that there's this racist component to the, you know, conflict with China. I don't think it's only about that. It's, you know, broader geopolitical and economic competition and stuff like that. But there is a important racist component. And so I think that, you know, the Five Eyes needs to be put, and communication security establishment need to be put on the defensive, particularly in the context of sort of anti-racist struggles going on, that, you know, so what is this really? What is this alliance? You know, is this a racist alliance? And sort of, you know, some pushback on that.
And apropos that, here we are asking, well, how come we didn't get elected to the Security Council, and making claims that in the new growing confrontation with China, the claim that we are part of the international community is with us, except when you look over your shoulder from the Five Eyes perspective, there's nobody behind them. They seem to be circling their wagons. Actually, Africa does not have a problem with China. Cuba, Venezuela, they don't have a problem with China. Actually, almost all South America does not have a problem.
Even Germany's not on. You know, even Germany is not really on board for a lot of this, right? That's also part of why the Americans have oriented their campaign against China via the Five Eyes, is because they're having difficulty getting pickup from some of the usual, you know, European countries that you know go along with basically whatever they want, you know, do.
Also, Germany would rather not be spied upon by their friends, right? Your article, we're speaking to Eve Engler. This is CIUT, the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM. Your article is full of wonderful information. There is an indication that the main problem Five Eyes has with Huawei is that they couldn't get into it. They want access to everybody's equipment. And I remember when the argument first broke out, a couple of Middle Eastern writers said, oh, wonderful. I'm not any longer going to be spied on by Five Eyes. I'll be spied on by China, and I much prefer that.
The Australian government, well, first of all, it's important to point out is that this campaign against Huawei predates the arrest of Meng Wanzhou. And the Five Eyes gathered, it was reported on publicly by the Wall Street Journal back in July of 2018. They gathered in Ottawa and they agreed that they need to go at Huawei, and so they, you know, that this campaign's been, you know, going on. The arrest of Meng Wanzhou, I think, is just one part of that. Additionally to that, they want back doors. They want the ability, and the Australian government even published a statement, which was then taken down, saying that we might need to put pressure on these companies to create back doors that we can infiltrate with our you know, spying equipment. And you know, Huawei isn't as amenable to these pressure tactics, and that's part of the campaign.
Part of the reason Germany is thinking about staying with it is that they feel they'd be more secure with it.
Yeah, and so despite this incredible pressure from the U.S. and, you know, Germany has conceded over and over again to U.S. pressure on so many different issues, they're not sure about going along with this.
Yeah. We're speaking to Eve Engler. The article is in Canadian Dimension. Let's go to the Canadian democracy, such as it is. When was any decision made to make China an adversary? Why did we arrest a woman who had not broken, a businesswoman of some prominence, who is not any kind of an enemy? She's a business person. And someone named Bolton, according to Globe and Mail, made the decision that she be apprehended by friendly state called Canada. When did our democracy and democratic leaders decide these kind of things are a good idea for Canada?
Yeah, I mean, they clearly jumped into this without discussion. But I think we do need to look at the, you know, the history of this. I have another piece I'm just working on where we go back, and I think that, you know, Canada has been hostile to China and before Mao won, right? I mean, Canada was providing weaponry and funding to the Kuomintang back in the right at the end of the Chinese civil war, and when Mao's forces won. Canadian naval vessel was sent there, right at the end, alongside British and American. There's even a whole history. I mean, Canadians trying to get Hong Kong from maintain it as part of the British Empire. There's a military component to that. Canada refused to recognize the Chinese government for more than 20 years. There's Canadian naval vessels, but up to, in recent years, patrolling in the South China Sea as part of these American efforts to rally, you know, regional countries against China, and, you know, over different territorial disputes. I just saw a story last night where a Canadian, François-Philippe Champagne, the foreign minister, had a discussion with his Indian counterpart. And one of the things they discussed was basically like China and you know, kind of pushing back against China. And of course, there's been a border dispute and between Chinese and Indian soldiers recently. So, you know, Canada's even been working to like sort of prod India in that, you know, into conflict with China. And that's something the Americans have obviously been pushing. So Canada has taken this, you know, very aggressive opposition to, I mean, I should also point out, most importantly, the Korean War in the early 1950s, where 3 to 4 million people were killed, that was in large part designed to weaken China and possibly even try to, you know, overthrow Mao's forces. Something like 1 million Chinese troops were killed in the Korean War after American and Canadian forces went right up to the Chinese border and were bombing into China. And so there's this whole background to contain China, that Canadian geopolitical policy in a very aggressive form for decades was about containing China. And, you know, it's, I think, continued all the way along, but in the last handful of years, the military and the security, so-called security element of the Canadian state have really joined back in with this American campaign on that front. And I think that the arrest of Meng Wanzhou is really, you know, fits within that, and that's the communication security establishment, Five Eyes, pushing that and checking this, you know, this Chinese, one of the first Chinese sort of like, you know, global corporate technology success stories, which is what Huawei is, and it's about, you know, checking Chinese power. Playing off a lot of, you know, sort of latent xenophobia in Canadian political culture. For sure, this is something that hasn't been properly discussed by the Liberal government. I do think it is important to point out that I think the Liberals, there is a wicked battle going on between two different elements of the foreign policy establishment. The corporate crowd, who's generally on board with better relations, they see this as somewhat self-defeating. China's economic powerhouse. We want to make profits, relationship, whatever. And then the military, and the military-industrial complex, and the security intelligence apparatus, which is way more tied into the U.S., and them pushing, you know. So the Liberals, actually, their preference was more in alignment with the corporate crowd and less with the sort of military industrial complex crowd on the conflict with China. And so the Liberals have really, I think, been pushed in a direction partly tied to the Americans just ramping up their campaign. I don't think the population is really understands the implications and the sort of dynamics that are going on here.
But we don't have a parliament or a parliamentarian. Maybe the Green Party will produce one. We're having an interesting debate there, but there isn't a voice saying, why don't we review all this? It's a consensus across the board in Canada that Donald Trump is some type of dangerous aberration. That's the way they talk about him. However, one phone call and they do what he wants. And the NDP and the Greens, as far as I know, the Bloc, they don't disagree. They all say, yes, sir, do it.
I think interesting. I think the Bloc has put out some level of criticism, but yeah, I mean, take the thing of the whole, this, the Liberals frame this all as the rule of law, but we are upholding, in detaining Meng Wanzhou, we're upholding illegal U.S. sanctions against Iran. And I mean, that, you know, we are basically upholding the violation of international. No one points that out. No one in the, you know, Globe and Mail's into pointing out. And I don't even know that, you know, when the Globe and Mail reported that Meng Wanzhou had been to 6 countries with extradition treaties with the U.S. Between the period when the Americans said they, you know, that they launched a judicial case against her. And when Canada detained her en route to Mexico, she'd been to six different countries. The Americans didn't ask any of those countries to detain her. And the Globe and Mail got Mexican officials that said, yeah, if the Canada wouldn't have detained her in the Vancouver airport, we wouldn't. There's no way we would have detained her. So even Mexico, so we talk about this as if the Canadian economy is dependent on the American economy and therefore we have to go along with the American empire. The Mexican economy is more dependent on the U.S. And the Mexican officials saying, no, there's no way we would have detained her. And I think that's where we bring in the question of this isn't just about economic dependence. Yes, there is an economic dependence. This is Canada being part of this exclusive alliance of, you know, white supremacists, former British colonies, you know, Five Eyes, however, you know, it manifests in slightly different forms. This is what this is.
They're cousins.
Cousins, exactly. Right?
They were speaking to Eve Engler. And you know, Eve, another matter that, and then to me, it plays right into the white supremacist assumptions and proud outlook of the Five, is that Mulroney also said, we're a civilized country. Now that is really interesting. Civilized. And that's why we cooperate with the US, which bombed Libya, of course, making it possible for the Saudis to bomb the hell out of poor Yemen. The U.S. had Abu Ghraib for the whole world to see. They have Guantanamo, which they said they were going to get rid of, but did not get rid of. They have, what do they call that? It's a special extradition where they remove people from other third countries. I think Italy is suing the CIA for grabbing people off the streets in Rome and taking them to black ops places. I mean, this is public matter. We're civilized. Can you talk about how civilized we are and where is it? Isn't that a dangerous idea?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brian Mulroney, you know, civilized, you know, bomb Iraq. Brian Mulroney support Indonesian occupation of East Timor. Support Israel's, you know, attacks against peaceful Palestinian protests. I mean, that's, you know, Brian Mulroney has a long foreign policy, long civilized record of foreign policy. And that's, you know, something that's continued. I mean, you know, overthrow an elected government in Haiti and lead to thousands of people being killed. And this is all under the guise of our responsibility to protect. Destruction of Libya under the guise, again, of responsibility to protect, or, you know, our civilized forces, or us bringing civilization to Libya. And what do you have? You have war that goes into Mali and across the Sahel region. You have slave markets that appear in Libya. You have predominantly black towns that are depopulated in Libya. This is obviously a long history. You go back, you know, century of Canadian foreign policy being justified and framed in this way. That's, you know, a century later, people recognize as, you know, undermining civilization, but it, you know, continues on up until today.
Yeah. Of course, we had an indigenous leader beaten up on national television. I didn't hear Mulroney say anything about civilization on that point, but I think that's what he means by civilization, doesn't he? He means conquest and domination. We're speaking to Eve Engler, and Eve has written many, many wonderful books. His latest article that we're speaking of today is Canada's Membership in the Five Eyes Alliance, Promoting Conflict with China, July 3rd this year, Canadian Dimension. We've just had a decision to appoint Bob Rae to be Canada's ambassador. Could there be a more perfect choice from the point of view of that gang that we've been speaking of than Bob Rae? Can you talk about Mr. Ray's qualifications?
Yeah, I mean, I did a story on Bob Rae. I mean, I think the first thing is the appointment of Bob Rae is the Liberals saying, we won't listen to what the international community said when voting against Canada to be to get a seat on the Security Council. And the international community clearly rejected, as they did in 2010, they clearly rejected the Canadian foreign policy that's anti-Palestinian, that's pro-NATO, that's you know, backs up these mining companies involved in all kinds of abuses, that you know, is part of the Five Eyes. And they rejected that policy now under the branding of Justin Trudeau, as they rejected in 2010 under the different type of branding of Stephen Harper. And basically, by appointing Bob Rae as kind of this new ambassador to the UN, the Liberals are saying, we don't care what was, you know, how the international community responded to Canadian foreign policy, we're doubling down. And Bob Rae, of course, you know, he left the NDP, former Premier of Ontario as an NDP. He left the NDP because apparently the NDP was supporting Palestinian rights too much back in 2002. And of course, he wrote a nice op-ed in the National Post detailing his reasons for leaving the NDP. He's somebody who has justified Canada's 2004 coup in Haiti, who has justified the campaign against the Venezuelan government recently, and, you know, talked to when Chavez died, talked about how now maybe there should be more democracy in Venezuela. He's somebody who's, you know, prodded Canada into staying in Afghanistan, and he made that alliance with when he was leader of the Liberal Party, basically prodded Stephen Harper to stay in Afghanistan even longer, came out aggressively on Libya, and, you know, demanded that Canada immediately recognize the transitional council before the Harper government had even done that, and basically pushing the Harper government into the leading the NATO bombing campaign of Libya. So he's got a long, you know, militarist record. Obviously, you know, Justin Trudeau fully understood this when appointing him, and it's saying to the world that no, we're going to continue with our you know, alliances, our Five Eye alliances, our NATO alliances, and we don't care what the rest of the world you know, thinks about Canadian foreign policy.
Yeah, he turned over his seat in Parliament to Chrystia Freeland, right? The very definition of a statesman. Eve Engler, it's great to talk to you. We look forward to more articles. What we're talking about now strikes me would be a wonderful book. I know that you are capable of generating a book a year, so I'm, as a solicitor, I would urge you to write along these lines. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.